Hello, Merry Christmas, and welcome to the Live Well Lifestyle Seminar with Perry Avis today. I'm so excited about Christmas, and I'm so full of love and gratitude and appreciating right now, and that's what I want to share with you. I'm excited about today's exercise or lesson or however you want to call it, sharing, I think I'd like to call it. I titled it, How to Digest the 3-Day-Old Dehydrated Brownies in Your Life, or How to Deal with the People You Love to Hate. All of us sometimes have that person that just gets under our saddle blanket like a burr, and you consider them a professional agitator when they come in your life. You feel judgments, you feel anguish, you have labels for them. You want to protect yourself, and you think, oh no, not this relative again. You mean I have to go through this another year? So I'm hoping to give you a formula today to deal with all the people in your lives that may fall into that category temporarily or for prolonged periods of time. And I also want to begin with my say Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, or whichever way you choose to celebrate. The God in me respects and loves and honors the God in you. And so, you know, I don't want to step on anyone's toes. It's a season I love and I love to share, but I also respect whichever way your religion takes you. So, that being said, shall we begin? I've learned in life that people do what they do because they don't know another way. They really don't. If they don't do it intentionally, they're not purposely harmful most of the time. And oftentimes we say things that hurt people, but we just don't know how to communicate. And communication is a difficult topic on how to communicate and keep harmony in your life with yourself and the other person. So that's sort of my intention for today. And it reminds me of a story back when I was speaking, and I never took a vacation. I never took time off. Every time I went to give a talk somewhere, it was like a vacation. So why did I need to plan a vacation? And I was single and by myself, so I just didn't take it. And someone offered to loan me their cabin on the river, on the Frio River in Lakey, Texas. And it's a beautiful little lazy town on the river, and there was a waterfall right in front of their house. And so I went down there to spend the weekend, and my goal was to not communicate, not to be sociable, not to get out and build friends like I usually do. It was just to be, just have 3 days of being. And I went in, when I got to the cabin, I covered all the clocks, took my watch off. I'm not sure I had cell phones back then anyway. And so it was just to be. And if I was hungry, I would eat. If I was sleepy, I would sleep. If I wanted to walk, I would walk. If I wanted to jump in the river, I'd jump in the river. And they had a beautiful little gazebo with the swing overlooking the river. And most of the time, I just enjoyed watching the river flow. And it just kept flowing, regardless of the obstacle. It either went over, under, or around them. And how I liken that to life. One day I was out walking, and there was a troop of little boys on their bicycles going down this caliche rock road. And they all passed me and waved and went on in their merry way. In a little bit, I heard this crunching on the gravel behind me, and I glanced over my shoulder, and here was this lady marching down the road. She was fast at it, and she had her fist doubled, her jaw was clenched, her eyes were squinted, and she said, "Ryan, Ryan, come back here." And I looked down the road in the cloud of dust of little boys, and I wondered which one Orion was, because Ryan was definitely pulling her right down the road. But I didn't give it any thought. I've learned in life there are three kinds of business: your business, my business, and God's business. And Ryan wasn't my business. So the next morning I went down. We had a low water crossing, and the water kind of ran over a little dam there. And I went down toward the low water crossing just to pitch rocks and watch the ripples. And there were two teenage girls that came, and they went down the river. And the river is very shallow there. And in a little bit, this little boy came riding up on his bike, and he dropped his bike on the side of the road, and he came up to the river, and he said, "Did you see two girls go by here?" And I said, "Yes, they went that way," and I pointed the direction they went, and he took off after them. He was maybe 5 years old, six, a little boy, and I thought, you know, the water's shallow. He can walk across it. He'll be safe. In a little bit, I heard this crunching on the gravel behind me, and I looked back, and here's this lady marching down the road, fists doubled, angry, tight, jaw set, eyes squinted. She said, "Ryan, Ryan, come back here." And I thought, oh, that's a Ryan. He's a pretty powerful little kid. And she came by me, and I pointed the direction he went. She took off after him. In a little bit, here came Ryan in the lead again, ahead of his mom, marching up the road, and he got on his bike, and he started up the road, and she's coming up behind him, and she said, "Ryan, Ryan, get out of the middle of the road." And he hollers back, "I'm not in the middle of the road. I'm on the side of the road." "Ryan, you're in the middle of the road. Get out of the middle of the road." And she just kept yelling at him, and I thought to myself, you know, she doesn't know another way. She doesn't know how to say, "Ryan, honey, what would happen if a car came around that curve and that hill and you were on your bike there? What might happen?" And Ryan might say, "Oh, well, I might get hit. Maybe I need to get over further." "Oh, Ryan, you're such a smart little boy. Your teachers are going to be so proud of you when you get to school because you're so smart." Instead, by the time Ryan gets to school, he's brain dead to the sound of his name, and then the teachers get to deal with him. But she does what she does because she doesn't know another way. Her goal is to protect her son. If she could pick him and put him on a shelf where he'd never get hurt and be well and safe the rest of his life, she would. But we can't do that with children. You have to let them have their experiences. You have to let them fall and skin their knee and encourage them to get up again. But she does what she does because she doesn't know another way. So I found this quote that I love. "Each and every component, powerful law of attraction, response to your thinking and the story you tell about your life." Read that. "Each and every component that makes up your life experience, you draw to yourself automatically by the way the universe, God has wired the universe and calls it the law of attraction, in response to the way the thoughts you think and the story you tell about your life." So every incident in your life, the people you meet, the situations you find, in some way you've drawn them there. The way you talk about your money, your life, your financial assets, the way you talk about your body and the state of wellness, the way you talk your mental clarity, how many people say, "Oh, I'm just stupid, I can't remember anything." The more you say that, the more you create it. Your flexibility, your size, your shape, your work environment, how you are treated, work satisfaction and rewards, indeed, the very happiness of your life experience in general is all happening because of the story you tell. Now that's kind of a responsibility put on you, the story you tell. I want you to read that again later and really think about the words. We are creating by divine thinking, by our thoughts. If our thoughts are negative, we create negative experience. If our thoughts are hopeful and positive, we create hopeful and positive experience. If we think we're in poverty, we create more poverty. If we instead go to a higher place, "I would like money so I could do this and I could travel and see your beautiful world. I could share with others," different things of that nature. So you have to be careful what you say. When we learn to accept our unique differences and understand that other people don't disappoint us, what disappoints us, we have an expectation that other people should live their lives according to our values and principles. Think about it. When someone disappoints you, what really disappoints you is you have an expectation that they should live their life differently and they should do it your way. It's very judgmental and in no way unconditional love, as Jesus teaches us. As a follow-up, I leave you with this thought. People do what they do because they don't know another way. Can you lead by example? When you are tempted to judge, shame, criticize, ask yourself, what would Jesus do? Show some love. The way you see a person is the way they'll be for you. It is as if you're holding them hostage to your beliefs about their shortcomings, and what you look for and focus on, you will find. Believe me, they can feel the anger, the frustration, the disconnect, and your desire to change them. The body never lies. When you hold a disagreement, your facial expressions will change. The shoulders tense up as if you're preparing for war. This negative energy is like a slap in the face to the other person. They can feel your disapproval of them. It's written all over your body. I don't like you, it shouts. I was working with a lady who could not see her ex-husband differently. She had a plethora of words and labels that visually painted a negative picture of how she saw him. Just thinking of him walking into the room, and she was prepared for body battle, and her body showed it. And he sensed it. So no good outcome could ever come from these confrontations. I asked her to remove all the labels and just see him as a man walking into the room. And she couldn't do it. She said, I just can't do it. Finally, in desperation to crack her mental hold on him, I suggested, try this. See a naked man walking into the room with a little penis. At that, she cracked up and we laughed till we cried. Now she has a new vision in her mind every time she sees him. And he is not near so daunting. They begin to communicate peacefully. Why? Because she put down the belief she was holding him hostage to and created a space where he could change. Until we're willing to take the labels off of and our judgments off of other people, there's no way they can possibly change for us. They are responding to our thoughts about them in like kind. So when you're pushing against someone, being human, we push back. They feel it and will give you more of what you don't want. There is a negative energy present that says, you're not good enough yet. Until you drop your beliefs and put down your gun loaded with reasons why they need to change, you will always be at war with them. Are you willing to put down the gun and let them be more than they appear to be? Can you show them some love? That's what it all boils down to. Now, growing up, I was a tomboy, and when I was young, I had a horse, and every day after school, I would go ride, and then I'd have to feed and curry my horse and put the hay out for him. It was my horse and my chore. My neighbor and good friend, Sally O'Brien, made excellent grades while I struggled in math. So after riding, I would go over to her house to study. Now, her mother disapproved of my dress, as I would come straight from the barn. She always dressed her children. They were meticulously dressed. You know, they had the white socks with the little lace ruffles on them and the pretty little dresses. And here I'd come in my jeans and boots and usually with hay or horsehair on me. Her mother would disapprove, and as I would come straight from the barn. She let me know with the look she gave me, and she did have a look. She just kind of looked me up and down and nodded her head to go to Sally's room. But she let me know it with her look, and she gave me the power to make her miserable by not conforming to her standards. I never bothered to change before going over. Like, I know you don't like this, so here's more of it. And that's what the way we act as human beings. You don't like this? Let me give you a little bit more. See if you like this. It's a human response. To invoke the best from others, you must find a vibration that is a match to the best in others. Now, I want to read that again. To evoke the best from others, you must find a match to the best in others. So you need to look for the best in others, to evoke the best from them. Find something you can compliment them about. Say something nice. And I like to use the compassion exercise from Avatar. It's called Just Like Me. And you can hold this person in your mind. They don't have to be in the room. You don't have to be saying it to them. You can say them with them in your field of vision. You can just say and realize, just like me, this person has experienced hardship, pain, and suffering in their life. Just like me, this person has known sadness, loneliness, and despair. Just like me, this person is seeking some happiness in their life. Just like me, this person is seeking to fulfill their needs. Just like me, this person is learning about life. Show some love and see what happens. Notice the anger falls away and your body lightens up and things that aggravated you lose importance. See them as whole, as complete, just as they are, for they are in their perfect learning experiences. Invite them for lunch or coffee. Get to know them and their journey. You may make a lifelong friend. And I have to admit, I was so guilty of playing into the role that Ms. O'Brien saw me in. And so I was an equal component of it, and we both had something to learn. The best thing you could do for anyone that you love is to be happy. If you have a member of your family having a difficult time, you can be a living example, just always continuing to be happy. Don't go down the dark rabbit hole with them. The very worst thing that you could do for anyone that you love is to be unhappy and expect them to try and change it when there's nothing anybody else can do that will make you happy. Being happy is your job. You always have a choice of wearing your mad shoes or your happy shoes. Always. When my grandson gets mad, the best thing I can do is let him alone with his madness. When he gets tired of wearing his mad shoes, he'll come back in. But to try to cheer him up when he's upset, you're losing the battle. Some people just need to be mad, and maybe being mad makes them happy. So leave them alone and watch them. It won't last very long. We never wear our mad shoes very long because they hurt. They pinch our toes. If it's your dominant intent to hold yourself in vibrational harmony with who you really are, you could never offer any action that would cause anybody else to be unhappy. So let's read that again. That's really important to understand it. If it's your dominant intent to hold yourself in harmony with who you are, to be happy in your life, you can never offer any actions that would cause someone else pain or to be unhappy. So if you're happy in your life, you can't dish out a serving of misery to someone else. So that sort of puts the responsibility in your lap, doesn't it? When you try to tell people what to do, you alienate them and therefore interfere with their natural learning process and journey. We learn by experiences. What works or doesn't work. When you save people from learning a few hard lessons, they never learn to deal with life. Then one day you won't be there to bail them out, and they're not prepared to make decisions and think for themselves. To find solutions, they don't know how. You rob them of creative thinking by jumping in and saving them. Teaching them there is always another way and encourage creative thinking, and they will find a solution. There's always a solution to every problem, and it deals with your thinking and the way you see it. So always look for the solution. It may not be the solution you want, but it will be a acceptable solution. Stay open to a positive solution. And this is where you can come in with prayer and ask for help. Help me find the way. Help me find my way. How can I deal with this person? You want to praise them and, more importantly, see them as successful rather than needing your help. Tell them, I know you're going to be an outstanding in your dance recital or your soccer game if they're young kids. You have such good skills and are quick to learn and you practice hard. Now go do your thing and just have fun. Empower them to be all they can be. Remember, intercessory prayer is other people believing for you what you can't believe for yourself. Your job is to build them up and help them to believe in themselves. The other day, my grandson had a kind of a hard learning experience. He got to school, and they were having a basketball game that afternoon, and he couldn't find his gym bag. He lost his gym bag, and he panicked, and he called his stepfather, and he asked him, well, they live 8 miles from town, and his stepfather is in the construction business, and he does his own work and has his own crew. So he took off time, ran back to the house, searched the other car, called my daughter, and came by the school and looked in her car, no gym bag. Well, what happened was because he didn't have his uniform, the coach let him play on the C team. And by the time we got there to the game was over. I wasn't there. I wasn't able to go that day. But my daughter drove up to pick him up, to go watch him play. And the C team had played an hour earlier, and she missed the game. And he was upset, and they were going home, and he was so mad at himself for losing his gym bag. And a gym bag is pretty hard to lose. It's quite large, and it had his shoes in it, his uniforms and towels and all sorts of paraphernalia. And she said, Jack, just calm down, and I want you to backtrack. When is the last time you had it? Did you have it? Could you have left it on the school bus? And she said, no, I didn't ride the bus Monday. I had to be there early to take a test for the geography spelling bee. And so, could you have left it here? No, I didn't leave it there. And all of a sudden, the light bulb came on. He said, Mom, turn around quick. We've got to go back to school. I know where I left it. I left it in the room when I had to be there early to take my geography test. Turn around, go back, and let me get my clothes, and maybe the coach will let me play a little bit. And she said, Jack, the game's already started. The teacher's left for the day. The door is locked. You'd have to find a janitor to unlock it. By the time you get dressed, the game is over, and I'm not sure the coach would let you play anyway because you were irresponsible with your gear. Just learn this lesson and go home and try to remember to keep track of your things. So this is a learning experience. If he had called me, I would have not gone searching for it. I said, Jack, this is your problem. The ball's in your court. Sit down and remember where you left it. But we so often jump in like Matthew did and run around searching, trying to help them. And he needed the experience. He needed to be on the C team. He needed not to be able to play, to remember, because he has a habit of losing things, and everybody always picks up after him and brings them to him. So it's learning by the hard experiences. We have to let our children have that experience. This is from a book called Follow Your Heart by Matthew Andrews. It's an easy read, and he has illustrations in it, and it's very witty. He said, we give thanks for our benefit, and here's why. We receive in life what we dwell upon. Get that. We receive in life what we dwell upon. As we express gratitude for what we have, we feel richer, so more comes our way. So get that. So what you think about, you add to your life. So if you're blessed and in gratitude, I just don't know how I could have much more love in my life. I feel so loved. I feel so connected to so many of you out there listening in. I've made some lifelong friends, and it almost brings me to joyful tears. I'm trying to keep a straight face now. If you force change upon other people, you disrupt the process. So if you go in and bail them out, you're disrupting their learning process and prolonging it. You say, but it's painful to watch other people being stupid, right? But when you force them to change, they don't learn. In a nutshell, people fall into two groups: those that make regular adjustments to their life strategy and those that like to hit the brick wall and then change. Neither one wants you to tell them how to live their life. The best way to help is let them have their experience and then say, wow, did that turn out, that didn't turn out so good. Was that what you intended to happen? What did you learn from that? I bet you'll figure out another way to do that next time. You're a sharp person and are good at finding solutions. Or when someone really messes up, ask, what was your intention in doing that? And listen. Oftentimes in their minds, what they did makes logical sense. You can ask them, can you think of another way that would get better results next time? Teach them to think things through and to realize instead of saying negative things to them. Put the ball in their court. Give them some time to come up with an answer. Never say, why in the world did you do that? What were you thinking? That was so stupid. Shaming and guilt tripping will strip them of confidence and make them feel unworthy. If they don't come up with a solution, you can say, I can think of a suggestion. Would you like to hear it? And if they say no, respect it. If they ask for your help, you can make a suggestion. Otherwise, keep it to yourself and trust they will learn just as you did when you were young. Another thing you can do is to help your children and others succeed is see them as capable and praise them when they are doing things correctly. Give compliments. At the end of the day at dinner, ask them what good things happened in your life today and listen, and then share your blessings. Teach them to look for the good things and to be thankful. I bet you will think of another way to do that next time is always an option. In closing, remember that we are not here to be punished. We are here to be educated. Every event has the potential to transform us, and disasters have the greatest potential to change our thinking. Act as if every moment has a purpose, and your life will have a purpose. Figure out why you needed the experience, conquer it, and you won't need it again. Andrew Matthews. The patient story. If you ask for patience, God will give you ample opportunities to practice being patient. Be careful how you ask. For an example, God, may I find peace in all moments and accept the perfection of what is. That's a different way of saying I need more patience. May I find peace in all moments and accept the perfection of what is. You know, if you get stopped by a train, you get frustrated and angry. You're arguing with what is. The train runs on that track, and it's got its time, too. And your evil thoughts about it are not going to make it disappear and go away. You know, just be at peace with it. Be at peace for it. Look around and see what you can see. Notice things. Accept it. Closing prayers I have for you. God, lead, guide, and direct us to see the best in others, to show them some love and encouragement, to allow them to learn from their own life lessons, to free ourselves of the burden of needing to change others, to see with the eyes of God and pure love, to allow free will and to be an example by our own lives. We ask these things in Christ's name. Amen. And here's an exercise you can do from afar. And it doesn't, you don't have to have the person there, just have the person in mind. If you have a person you have a conflict with and you're dreading being with them, just say, may the God in me love, honor, and respect the God in you. That's may the pure God love in me find the pure love in you. Because we're all connected, we're all born pure love. And that essence is still in all of us. Some of us have it buried quite deeply. So just say, may the God in me love, honor, and respect the God in you. And that is my gift for you for the holiday season, so that you have many happy family reunions and enjoy the festivities and the the chaos and the excitement and the disasters of a burning dish or something that messed up and the recipe didn't come out quite right. It's all perfect, and we're going to live without it. And 5 years from now, would you even remember the incident that brought you so much despair? I'm going to look over the question page and see if anybody has a question. I'm going to post this. Oh, what a lovely presentation today, Perry. I wish the entire world could have heard it. Oh, thank you, Mary. That's from Mary Law, my friend in Kansas, my long-distance friend. She's a wonderful person, and I am always very touched by her. And then I would like to see if anybody has a question or a challenge or somebody they're working with, if you'd like me to help you. I'm going to post this exercise for, it'll probably come up tomorrow, and you can go in and listen to it. It'll be archived on the Bentonite Clay Info website, to the archive for recordings. And the Live Well exercise is there also, and it'll have the title there. And you can go in and read it again if you like, and if it helps you. And my phone number and email or contact are on the bottom of it, or they're also on that Bentonite Clay Info webpage. And so I would encourage you, if you have somebody you're having a hard time with, call we can discuss it. Maybe we can find a way to find that peacefulness. So, wishing you the peaceful joy and love on all the blessings that the holiday seasons can bring you. This is Perry A. signing out with love. Until next year. Happy 2016 ending. Look back at all your wins, all the beauty and all the accomplishments, and go into the new year expecting this or something better. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Bye-bye.